good evening, and welcome to the Could Have Been Champions Sunday evening program on ABC Local Radio. Hello, Jeff Richardson.
Hello there, Billy.
Hello, Ian Cover.
Yes, good evening, Billy. Hello, Australia.
Having a nice old wrestle with your headset there.
Well, one of my ears just dropped off, but these are technical issues that the listeners don't need to be concerned with, but the left one dropped off. But
oh, it's troublesome, that left.
These are the Van Gogh headphones.
Log a ticket, as they say in the business.
Is that right? Mm. Log a ticket. Right.
Oh. And hello, Greg Champion.
Yes, good evening. And I was over on those headphones last night, and there was only one there last night too. And I'm surprised that the ABC Maintenance Department hasn't jumped right onto that.
Oh, no, that's a separate issue. Oh. Far be it for us to air our dirty earphones, but the ones you were on last night only have one earphone working.
Yeah.
The ones I'm using tonight, the actual earphone drops off the bit that goes over your head.
That's a different matter.
Different matter.
Oh, I see. That'd be a different department.
Exactly.
Maintenance.
So as you said, that was last night when we were here for the Saturday soiree.
And we need earphones, listeners, because when you phone in, we need them to talk to you. 1-300-800-222 is our number. 1-300-800-222. Always good to get your calls.
Hey, speaking of earphones,
yes,
I was talking to a young person this week.
Oh dear! Well, there's your first mistake.
Now, apparently, you know how.
Hang on. You were talking to a younger person.
I was conversing with.
What sort of response were you getting?
Yeah. No, they were.
Don't know something.
They were younger than that.
Oh.
These kind of little earphones that you stick in your ear, almost like a piece of cotton wool.
They call them earbuds in the trade.
Well, you know, they've been going for 20 years now, since they first burst on the scene.
They were there with crystal sets.
And, although the crystal set ones were a bit more reminiscent
of a hearing aid.
Yes. But the ones that were like your genuine little speaker kind of things.
Okay.
I first saw them, I reckon, about 20 odd years ago. But apparently, your big muff style ones are making a comeback.
Correct.
So you're up with the latest.
I haven't been directly told this by younger folk, but I've observed some of the literature that they like to pore over.
Uh-huh. I've seen them in the public transport system wearing them.
Yeah. So you get out and about, whereas
I'll make it
we're
my
out
business
of touch.
Too.
Yeah.
Yes, they're coming back with a vengeance.
I wouldn't be surprised if that's on a wish list for a lot of people at Christmas this year in the younger demographic.
That was the context.
You know why they're making a comeback?
Why are they making a comeback?
Well, they're acoustic jewellery, aren't they?
Are they?
That's just what it's all about, isn't it?
It's a look. It's all about how they look.
Is it acoustic bling, Billy?
Mm. Yeah, I think it is. You can wear them on your head, like you wear your sunnies on your head.
Ah.
You can wear them around your neck, so it looks like a piece of...
What you can't do is fold them up and put them in your purse.
That'll be next, won't it?
It's a fashion statement.
Mm.
Okay.
And I believe the fidelity is very good.
Oh, it's bound to be better than little pieces that you...
Well, those bud things keep breaking anyway.
Yes. And if the foam bit falls off, you're gone because they don't grip in your ear.
You know what they need to bring back for old duffers like us so we can walk around and look like we're part of this thing that's the fashion? Now they're wearing the big ones on it. I think we need to get around with old Bakelite ones on, looking like we're intercepting messages from the on the Western Front.
Or we're listening to the sonar trying to track the submarine.
And I saw during the week a blow-up chair offered at a cheap shop that specialises in inexpensive and rejected things, a blow-up chair with little speakers in it so you can plug your iPod into the blow-up chair and the music comes out your little speakers, very much like the Featherston chair designed in the late 50s, early 60s that your stereo could be played through.
See, I don't like it mixing that with the swimming pool. Although, who knows? Maybe it's all
waterproof. That's exactly. Yeah. Well, what will they think of next? I mean, James A. Lachlan,
everything old is new again.
James, if you're listening, can you just tell us what's come across your desk at the New Inventors during 08 that might bob up?
Bob up on a Christmas list.
Yeah.
What will they think of next? Reminds me of the old man would read the paper and go, oh, look at this. You never know what's going to happen next. So I wrote that down then you could say, never a truer word was spoken, Dad.
have you turned either of those into a song?
Yes. You never know what's going to happen next. Yes, I've tried to. Yeah.
Followed by?
Never a truer word was spoken. And yours was, again?
No, you said you had two, what your dad said and then your response. I just said, what will they think of
I've tried
next?
To get them both into songs, but we love those little aphorisms that the old man comes out with.
Mm. Well, there you go.
You could go back and forward all day, couldn't you? You know, you never know what's going to happen next. Never a truer word was spoken. You're not just whistling Dixie. You can say that again.
And you know what? In a public bar somewhere, that conversation is unfolding as we speak.
You can add, you're in a crowded boat there.
Oh, yeah. Doug Walters.
Robinson
Doug
Caruso.
Walters. Dougie Walters, great player. Mm. Top player, Doug Walters.
Mm. You can say that again.
Oh, one of the best.
Mm.
Doug Walters. Mm. He was good.
Yeah.
Oh, really good.
Oh, never a truer word was spoken. Oh,
great player.
I was at a restaurant once at Magnetic Island, and for the whole of the dinner, I was eavesdropping on the woman behind me, yes. who for the whole three courses did just a rapier quick, he said, she said.
Oh,
the
really?
Whole thing. And he said blah, 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 and then she said, and then he said. That went the whole thing, all he said, she said. Now, how do they do it?
Just an extra piece of information. That restaurant on Magnetic Island was the, I think you'd call it background ambient atmosphere music. Was it Demis Roussos?
No, I don't think it had any.
Oh.
It was an outdoor restaurant, and no piped music was
no
Demis. Offered.
No Demis, okay.
Why do you make the connection between Magnetic and Demis?
I don't recall Magnetic Island being in the Greek archipelago.
No, but it doesn't take much to pipe him through the PA.
Oh, every chance. Give it a bit of island sort of feel.
Mm. Good spot, Magnetic Island.
Just to interrupt for half a moment, if you're listening on Magnetic Island, 1-300-800-222, just sing his... give it virtues. What about? I've just had someone in the last week say they spent some time there saying how much they enjoyed Magnetic Island.
It's got a whole large chunk of the island's national park.
Yes, over on that side. Yeah. You can get around there on surf skis and whatever.
I've not been there.
You really must have, because it's a tropical island, but it looks more like a volcanic island.
Mm. I've seen pictures.
Yeah, and it's got several bays all with their own charm and some which are quite discreet.
Would we be able to do an OB from Magnetic Island, or would it interfere with the technology?
The signal.
Yeah. Did your watch play up when you were at Magnetic Island?
Well, I don't carry a watch, but I didn't.
Very different to your Queensland resort island that you might imagine when you close your eyes and think of one, in that the majority of the island is, in fact, national park. So the part that's developed and where you can go and stay doesn't make up the rest of the island. So it's what some might say, unspoiled.
Mm.
Oh, I think there might be some ritzy joints just finding their way out.
I'm not saying there's a lack of ritz, but there's...
I never got further than Great Keppel Island, which I think might have been down the food chain from Magnetic Island.
There are quite a few up that way.
It's right on the tropic, Great Keppel, offshore of Rockhampton.
Mm. Mm. But Magnetic Island's got a butte house as you go up the hill, a house on your right as you're going up the hill, which has a large rock feature built into the house.
Oh, is that right? Because there's quite a bit of rock there, isn't there?
Oh, yes. Mm. It's like you're in the Yu Yangs. Oh. Steve's in Penrith. Hello, Steve.
G'day, mate. I know that house you're talking about too.
Do you really?
Tim Sheen's owned that there for a while.
Did he really?
He did.
Yeah, the rugby...
I thought Chicken owned that house.
Who?
Chicken.
Yeah.
Chicken?
Yeah.
And then
John the architect built it.
Yeah.
How do you know all this, Steve?
Mate, I lived there for 10 years.
Oh, did you?
What did you do on the island, Steve?
I saw you blokes come to a Bay of Origin game once.
Gee.
Did you blokes come to a Bay of Origin game?
I don't reckon we did.
Bay recall. Versus Picnic Bay?
I think you dreamed that.
There was a gang of blokes on the ferry with could have been shirts.
Oh, I didn't be thinking of Mecca.
Now, Steve, tell us what you did when you were living on the island.
Mate, I went up there and cut a brand new Jeep in half.
As you do.
You might have seen it. It was a blue stretched Jeep, and I took tourists around and ended up marrying one of them.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So you were like the island chauffeur?
Kind of.
Because many mokes are the go on Magnetic, aren't they, Steve?
Oh, mate, there's only a couple of them there. You're thinking of the mokes.
Mm.
This was an American-style proper Jeep, seated 10 people.
Mm.
Have a ball, mate, show the tourists around. There's a new bloke there got it now.
Right.
Keith's doing a great job showing everybody around and Tropicana tours.
How on earth did you manage to leave that island paradise? What's taking you to Penrith, Steve?
Mate, a couple of children down south in need of a bit of, TLC from Dad.
Yep.
You know, they're approaching 30, and by that age. I thought kids had themselves sorted out, but they wanted their dad back.
Yeah. Well, they wanted to get their hand into his wallet, no doubt. Good on you, Steve. Yeah. Nice to talk to you this evening.
And Penrith is its own little bit of paradise too.
Mm. Goes exactly. Quite nicely, Penrith.
Well, there you go.
So, who did he say has got the house now? Chicken.
That's what Billy's. Tim Sheen.
Tim Sheen's had it at one stage.
Had it.
Yeah. And John the architect.
Yeah, he built it. So I thought Peter told me Chicken had it.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's a beautiful place, and Ian, I think you should make it your business to go there on your next family outing because you'll like it. And it's affordable.
Mm. What's it? What? Which part of Queensland is it offshore of?
Off Townsville. You catch the ferry from Townsville.
Mm.
Actually, we should go up there and do a broadcast with Jono.
Mm.
John Nutting's from Townsville.
Well, actually, he likes to keep that quiet. So. No, he's from
it,
everywhere.
He says it on the wireless does himself.
He?
Yeah.
Well, he's got to live somewhere. No, he's got to come from somewhere.
He used to just sort of underplay that.
All right, he's from the moon.
So he's out of himself. Right.
He sleeps on Big Bob. From Bondi's couch.
So is Magnetic part of the reef? Where does it sit in relation to the reef?
Oh, it's 20 minutes off Townsville, due east, maybe a little bit northeast, but I couldn't tell you exactly, Geoffrey.
It's reefocality.
It's a bit sparse.
Someone might be able to inform us on 1-300-800-222. I haven't got my atlas in the studio tonight or my Islands of Australia book.
Well, there was a time when you could go to Great Keppel. I think it went twice. Mm. And
performing or holidaying?
Well, yeah, one of them you did get to sing.
It was a rock and roll island, Great Keppel.
That was it. Was that the younger sets?
Yes, yes, you've got it in one. Great Keppel appealed to the younger people.
Oh, the party island.
Whereas some of the others, perhaps Hayman, was catered more to the more mature holiday.
Which island was subject to the storm damage which decimated that island several years ago? Do you recall?
American, great
Lindemann?
Keppel copped a whack. How about South Mole?
Not too sure. One of the resort islands, unfortunately, did suffer severe damage some time ago. You know, Marilyn might know, or she might be joining us from Canberra to talk of other things. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi. Talking about Magnetic Island,
I
was at Frankston Teachers College, and we, for our final year, went for a trip right up through Queensland on the old Chuff Chuffs. You know, the trains going up there. And we went out to Magnetic Island for 3 days off Townsville. And the only thing that was on the island was near the rickety old wharf, there was a hotel. And right round on the other side of the island, there was a cabana resort. And that's all there was on the island.
What year was this, Marilyn?
64.
Gee whiz.
Magic.
And then we went on to surfers. And there wasn't a high-rise in surfers in those days.
In 1964, when you went to... How many weeks did you go there for?
No, we just went for 3 days.
3 days.
Basically, it was a two-week trip, and we'd kind of saved for it all year.
Was it like schoolies half week?
No, it was our final year at Teachers College.
Uh-huh. Oh, so it was Teachers College.
It was
college.
Your big graduation trip away.
We went kind of, I think it was probably around about July, August. It was in the dry. And then we went up to Cairns.
Did you have a seafood cocktail?
Oh, my God.
And you took the train all the way to Cairns?
Probably did have a seafood cocktail, yes.
The train went all the way to Cairns?
We went right through to Sydney. When we were in Sydney, the Big E came in, the Enterprise, the first time it came to Australia. Wow. And there were little Yankee sailors everywhere.
1964. And did they make you change trains? Where did you used to have to change it?
We had to change at Albury.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then we had we just had a day in Sydney and caught the night train, and we went right up on the train right the way through to Townsville, and then we went right up to Cairns.
Oh, so the train went right into Roma Street. You didn't have to sort of change carriages at Moolumbah?
I can't remember that. I don't think we did, no.
It sounds like a wonderful and capricious way to spend your last 3 hours before you were destined to be stuck in rooms with delinquents. Yes.
But that just shows you kind of the development that's gone on in the last 40 years.
Yes.
Well, that's can't deny progress. Well, I don't know who the brainiac was all the way down at Frankston in Victoria who had the brainwave to go to Magnetic Island.
Maryland's idea.
An enterprising student administrator or something. Steve's in Ivanhoe. Hello, Steve.
G'day. How you going, boys?
Very well, thank you.
We've spent about the last 13 years having holidays up there, and We certainly enjoy it very much because, like you said before, it isn't a resort. It's actually a reasonably daggy sort of place. But
and hello to all the people at Magnetic Island doing a great job to boost the tourism.
Hey, Steve.
That's a compliment.
I know.
You know what I love about the island, Steve? The curlews.
Yeah, well, they sound like birds that have lost their soul and they're looking for it at night.
They're mournful, aren't they, and quite spooky.
You can really scare people who haven't been there before.
Mm.
Tell them about that noise. Actually, one of the worst experiences I've had up there is watching the grand final, because whenever we're up there at school holidays and we always miss out on the grand final, I'm a Collingwood supporter, and 2002, 2003... You know, it wasn't a great experience watching the grand final in a bar full of Queenslanders.
Yeah. So is that pub just near the jetty still there that was being spoken about?
Yeah, that's still there. That's the sort of the Picnic Bar Hotel. And where we've tended to go more recently is the Marlin Bar, which is over at Horseshoe Bay. And that's got this fabulous sort of set of windows that look out over Horseshoe Bay, you can watch the sun go down and drown your sorrows while your team loses the grand final. It's quite good, really.
Sounds like we should be there tonight, watching the sun go down from the Marlin Bar at Horseshoe Bay.
There'd be a few Horseshoe Bays around the country, wouldn't there?
Yes, there's one in Bermagui.
Thanks, Steve. Barry's in Peghurst. Peghurst, is it, Barry?
Yeah, Peghurst, down here in Sydney.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How are you?
All right.
That's a shot.
I did my big trek up to Queensland, and I finally ended up at Townsville, and that was the highest place I've been to Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Then we went to Magnetic Island, but it was just after a cyclone.
Oh, really?
I'm not sure it was 73 or 74, and it was just after a cyclone. The place was a mess.
Oh, dear.
And yeah, I reckon that was 74 when that big wet came through, and there were flooding everywhere.
I think it was 73.
Yeah. Oh, maybe.
But I wasn't there while the cyclone was.
Oh, okay. You only saw the results.
The aftermath. Yeah. Cyclones only have aftermaths.
Yeah, and I stayed at the backpacker joint.
Yep.
And there was like going to a, what would you call it, a war zone. Just copped it.
Yeah, well, they turned it around pretty quickly because it looks super.
Thanks, Barry.
If I ever start up an establishment for backpackers estate, I might call it the backpacker joint.
I remember being up there when that wet came through.
Really?
Where the Barry, you saw him out, I was 73 or 74. Got trapped by the floods for about a week. Couldn't get in, couldn't get out. All the bridges were down.
Of Townsville.
This was closer to Rockhampton. I remember seeing a satellite photograph at the time that showed continuous unbroken water from the Gulf of Carpentaria all the way down to the mouth of the Murray.
Goodness me.
If you could have got up there with a canoe, you could have navigated the whole way.
It sounds like you're on the road, Andy. How are you this evening, Andy?
Yes, I am on the road.
Where are you travelling to and from?
I'm going from Adelaide to Broome, and I'm going to Macquarie north of Kalgoorlie at the moment.
Been to Magnetic?
Beg your pardon?
Have you been to Magnetic Island?
I have. 35 years ago, I took my wife there. I was a grain farmer in the valley originally in Victoria, and went there for our honeymoon, Magnetic Island. Went to a restaurant. It was an elegantly dressed lady who owned the restaurant.
Yep.
She sat down to talk to us, and she had a budgerigar on her glasses frames, like Dame Edna Everidge type glasses.
Yes.
And she said, give me one of your peas off your plate. And I said, what on earth are you going to do here? Anyway, the budgerigar, she put it in her mouth, and it proceeded to eat all my peas off peas that she was taking off my plate. Now, she picked the budgerigar would pick them out of her mouth from her glasses, so I'd never seen that bird trick. So that was my... a memorable little event at the restaurant at Magnetic Island.
I hope she brought you out another plate of peas.
No, they disappeared.
No. So, Andy, you're out of Kalgoorlie heading to Broome. About how far out are you?
I'm about 1,100 k's from Broome, so I'll get there tomorrow lunchtime.
And you said, you're going the back way, Andy.
Yes.
What is...
north of Kalgoorlie, Leonora... to Wiluna, and then there's a dirt road that comes out the Great Northern Highway south of Capricorn Roadhouse.
Wow. And we presume that you're not just going for a Sunday drive. We get the impression you might be driving a truck, Andy.
No, I'm driving a Toyota Land Cruiser and I'm going home to Broome. I've retired to Broome after living in the Victorian Mallee for 50 years.
Jeez.
Gee.
Looking forward to going fishing next week.
Oh, I bet you are, Andy. Well, drive safely.
Thank you. Cheers, boys. Enjoy the show.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, terrific.
Andy driving between Adelaide and Broome. They're going the back way, Kalgoorlie up to Broome.
And
thought he was hauling hogs.
No, retired from the Mallee to Broome. Not, nice work if you can get it.
Mm. His car would have been full of cardboard boxes crammed to the top with stuff. Hi, Steve. How's things in Joondalup?
They're pretty good, thanks, Billy. How are you? Over?
Yeah. We're good, thanks. Over.
Yes, it's still sunny over here.
Yeah.
Over.
Yeah, just watch out for any traffic going north of Kalgoorlie on its way to Broome.
Well, I was actually out in Kalgoorlie on Wednesday. I was in Gerald. I actually did 3,400 kilometres this last week.
Gee.
Mm. Now, you're a man who's travelled all over Australia. Have you ever been to Magnetic Island?
Well, actually, I actually had my honeymoon up there, which was very handy because my best mate's parents bought a resort up there back in the mid-'80s.
Mm.
So, yeah, it was quite a nice spot, and I actually caught up with him and his wife, with whom I sort of got together years ago in my old HQ Holden, and, yeah, caught up with him up there again, and we went and played 9 holes of golf and on the Maggie Island, and it was very, very nice.
Is it a 9-hole or an 18-hole course on Maggie?
Well, it's a 9-hole, but it has 2 tees in a lot of places, so you can play 18. Well,
fantastic.
Yeah, no, it's very nice little spot actually, but I've got to say that little bay that the fella was saying before, where you just sit at the pub and look out the windows, is something where you watch the sun go down is delightful.
Horseshoe Bay,
yeah,
Marlin Bar.
There's bougainvilleas everywhere there too, isn't there, Steve?
It's a lovely spot, Billy. It really is.
If I didn't know better, listeners to the Could Have Been Champions here on ABC Local Radio might think that Billy actually was born and bred and lived on Magnetic Island until about 2 weeks ago. Hey, he's even spotted the bougainvilleas.
Oh, I know all about it.
Yeah, no, it's a top little spot. And they've changed the entry in the bay to when you go over on the ferry these days too. There's a big new development on the way in and, it comes in at a different bay. I think it's Picnic Bay it comes in at now, where you can come in at one of the others. But... And that little pub just after you come in is still there.
Oh, that's good.
Yes, it's a nice little spot to kill a bit of time as well, Billy.
Mm. It well, they're all good there. There's not one part of the island that is more appealing than the other. It's a beautiful little spot.
Well, it's even better now they got rid of that stray crocodile that was relocated there recently.
Mm. Not aware of that.
No, the Department of whatever they are up there and nature and loving animals... relocated a crocodile to a magnetic island, but the trouble is it kept coming in at a whole heap of different beaches. and tourism, funnily enough, nosedived because nobody really wanted to be the snack.
No.
It's probably just sitting at the Marlin Bar looking at the sunset. That's where they'll find it.
Well, they could have, actually.
Good to hear from you, Steve.
No worries, boys. See ya.
See ya.
Have a good evening.
Bye, Steve.
Steve down there in Joondalup.
Johnny's in Pakenham. Hi, Johnny. Pakenham, G'day, Victoria, I guess.
Mate, yeah, Pakenham, Victoria. Mate, I was up there for 20 years up in Queensland. I was telling your old Minister for Producers there before that Whitehaven Beach was always the best part of the Whit Sundays. And, Magnetic's too far north and Brampton's too far south, you can't regard it as Whit Sundays. Whitehaven Island, the beach there was, mate, it was like cocaine to walk on. It's the finest sand in the world at Silicon Beach.
Squeaky, was it, John?
No, it's not squeaky. Mm. But the beach is about a K long, Whitehaven Beach. It's about a kilometre long, and it's pure white sand.
I think when the Hamilton Island Race Week is on in August, they go out to Whitehaven as part of that.
Yes, I've been there with that, yes, and that is one hell of a party.
Mm.
But very good, yeah. It's very nice up there. But Hayman Island was always the yuppie island. Hayman was the one that you couldn't do day trips there years ago because you had to spend $1,000 a night just to stay there.
Mm.
Yeah. Hamilton Island had Dirty Nellies, the nightclub, and had the Barefoot Bar, which both closed down since. They tried to make it look nicer.
Mm.
Linderman Island was the Club Med.
Yep.
Yeah.
And Whitsunday Island or Club, not Club Crocodile, Whitsunday Island or Whitsunday 100, I think it was called, Long Island. Long Island. And that was for all the backpackers.
And how did Great Keppel Island fit into the food chain at all?
Great Keppel, That's up Rockhampton, like Brampton Island's up Mackay, and they call it. They say it's a little bit too far south to be part of the Whitsunday.
Okay.
As like.
I think Brampton was a bit of a honeymoon island.
Yeah. Good on you, Johnny.
Yeah.
Appreciate that.
Got the form guide there on the island.
Yeah. Laurie's in Vermont. Hi, Laurie.
Oh, g'day, coulda beans. Oh. Yes, this is, I've been reminiscing like anything. It was only 45 years ago that my twin sister and I were on Magnetic Island. We had nurses' holidays, would you believe, and very, very little money. And on our notice board, there was cheap rates for the Centaur hostel there, cheap rates for nurses to have rest and recreation. And we're just, we had a marvellous time. But one of the memories was that the jeeps that the gentleman was talking about possibly, they had names. And two that we travelled on dipping round the bays, were little bays, were... Flighty Flo and Nippy Nell.
Gee, they sound like greyhounds, don't they, Laurie?
I think they were different colours, and there was a third one, but I can't remember.
Just waiting for Flighty Flo to go in.
Flighty Flo and Nippy Nell, and we had the twins, Laurie, and what was your sister's name?
Oh, my twinnie was Lindy. We were twin girls.
Both of you are twins.
Laurie and Lynn on Flighty
Laurie
Nell.
Laurie and Lindy. And we had enormous fun, and... an uncle of ours, we travelled. The whole thing was we travelled. It took 4 days and four nights, and we arrived at the shores of Townsville somewhere, and it was just pre-dawn, and some gentleman on the water side, he said, "I'll take pity on you girls and take you across," and we're on the workman's launch. As the sun came
what
up.
What an adventure.
Very popular too, I would have thought.
Oh, that's the Australian
way.
We
instantly made friends, isn't that funny? And,
yes.
On the jukebox at Arcadia Bay was Moon River.
It's got everything.
Made for you.
An uncle, I won't natter on, but an uncle knew of a hermit. This was the amazing thing. So he wanted us to know someone because we're so far from home. First holidays away from home. And there was a hermit off Horseshoe Bay. And everywhere we went, there was a little pencil note saying, "Twins, I will meet you at Horseshoe Bay."
On
about our third day there. And we had to get up early and get on Flighty Flo or Nippy Nell, who said, and it was a wilderness. Mm. And there's Arthur Scrivener, and he had a little boat, and he took us to his place, which was very rudimentary, and he cooked scones on the rocks for us, the hot rocks.
Oh,
he just slapped some flour on the rocks, and they came up as scones.
Oh, Laurie.
Great memories, Laurie. Thanks for sharing them.
I'd love to go back, Cooties. But I bet it's changed a bit.
I'm sure it would have.
Horseshoe Bay might have people, and it might have ovens.
Yeah,
45 years on.
I wonder where Arthur the Hermit is.
Yeah, he might have moved on. And just quickly before the news, Mark has a place on the island. Hi, Mark.
Good evening. Good evening. How are you?
Good. Well, thanks.
I know Magnetic Island relatively recently. My father-in-law shifted on to Maggie probably about 5 years ago. So, yes, we've got an apartment there at the new development, which is actually at Nellie Bay.
Nellie Bay
they
right.
come into now.
Yep.
Look, there's wonderful beaches there. There's probably 23 pristine beaches and amazing fauna and flora. And
Mark,
probably,
which is the beach that bathing costumes are optional?
That one I absolutely know because I've done it.
Give us a name, Mark.
It is...
Zealy Bay?
No, it is... Just bear with me for a moment.
So to speak.
Excuse the pun, yeah.
Yes, Billy, Ian. It's a word that doesn't get used very often these days, but I think we're forced to use it. I know this is the ABC, but look, I'll say it. Nudist. Nudist.
And the nudist beach has been revealed as being Bowling Bay. Does that ring a bell to you at Magnetic?
Well, Mark said it was... the Bowling Bay. It doesn't ring a bell to me, and I had a quick look at the map.
So you're familiar with it. You remember this beach?
Yes, I stumbled upon the beach.
Well, just one
and went in Rome.
One of the 27. You happened to just stumble upon the one in 27.
Crossing them off the list. I thought it was Arcadia, but I won't...
Bet you thought it was okay.
Bowling Bay might be the one. So,
you don't
thanks
hear
Mark
this word very often these days, do you? Nudist. No, I'll say it again.
No. Could you pronounce it nudist,
I think it's
please.
Nudist would be the go. But thank you to all our callers prior to the news with their stories about Magnetic Island, and particularly the stories going back 40 years plus.
In fact, the only time we come across it is in advisories on the television when there's a show's about to come on and they just want to make sure that you need to be aware that there may be adult themes, strong language, and maybe perhaps even nudity.
Yes, thanks to all our callers prior to the nudes.
Yes, very well done. So how about that? The nurses went away and the teachers' college students went away. School this week, isn't all that sort of...
But getting four days' travel to get all the way up there on the train, how's that? And then landing in Townsville as dawn is breaking and the ferryman taking...
I think perhaps that if school this week is to continue... all those attending should go by four-day train trip.
That might sort them.
So you don't hear the term teachers' college anymore.
No.
And the other thing you don't hear anymore, see anymore, is film classifications that I think were just M. And AO was the one.
AO, remember AO?
AO was the one you looked for when Mum was going out.
That's right. There was teenager. A, but then there was AO.
Which, for those who may not know, it stood for adults only, and was about as racy as it got then.
Oh, in your view?
Well, on the telly at home when Mum was out.
Of course, there was a different classification system in Adelaide. I'm sure it was much more lax.
Well, these are the days, of course, before international movies on the SBS.
On the soccer broadcasting service.
Not even adults are allowed to watch them.
But something that was completely banned everywhere else in Australia would have been AO in Adelaide. much more liberated.
That's right.
Civilised approach.
Yeah, did they have programs over there with an Alan... And in the form guide, standing for liberated.
So from the top down, it probably went AO, then A, and then...
What did A stand for?
PG.
Adult.
No, and it was M. PG's newer.
M wasn't in the A and AOs.
I was either M or PG then.
If anyone's got an old TV guide under their lino...
Well, Scott... Yeah,
PG's more recent.
Whip it out.
Scott Watkins-Sully last night on the Saturday Soiree, presented by the Could Have Been Champions on ABC local radio... from 7 till 10 Eastern.
Check your local guides.
Did quote from a 1962 Women's Weekly recipe last night. He may find that his father, Bob, has also got some old TV Times magazines.
He need look no further. I've got a feeling that at the back of, somewhere towards the back of your 1962 Women's Weekly may have been a half a page of TV guide.
Well, it was a national magazine.
Yeah, I think they had
a local guide.
In little print for all the different states.
Does PGR ring a bell?
Too recent.
Too recent.
Parental guide, the modern recommended
system.
Good stuff.
We may have some advice ready to be shared with us though, Billy.
Nicky's in Perth. Hello, Nick.
How you doing, guys?
Very well, thanks.
You got some categories for us there, Nick?
Yeah, well, back in the old days, I think AO was the worst.
According to Greg, the best.
Well, it depends whether Mum was home or not, I suppose.
Yes. It's all to do with Mum, isn't it?
Yeah.
Go on.
Then there was PGR.
Oh, was it PGR?
Yeah. Parental guidance recommended. Then there was G.
Yes.
And I think they had there was a kids rating, which was P, preschool.
Nick, there was an A classification, was there not?
I reckon I don't remember an A classification.
Yeah, A was like AO light.
Yeah, I reckon you're right there, Nick, but I reckon Greg's memories go back to a time before even that classification that you're remembering.
Yeah,
Nick, that's very true.
What era are you talking, Nick?
Sorry?
What era are you talking?
Oh, I'm thinking back to sort of the late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah, that's modern from Greg's point of
view. I think really your yardstick is just going to be answer this question, Nick. Number 96, what was its rating?
Quality television like that would have been G, wouldn't it?
It was G for gosh. What's going on here or coming off?
Yeah.
No, Thank you, Nick.
No, it's, yeah.
You obviously studied it closely.
Yeah, I did.
I think the O10 network had the race to race double with number 96 into the box for AO. The running double.
Good work. Thanks, Nick. Appreciate the call. 1-300-800-222 is the number at any time during the evening should you wish to converse with the Could Have Been Champions.
Should have asked Nick what rating he'd put on this program.
UT. Utter twaddle.
Oh, dear.
Andrew joins us from Coburg.
No, I don't know whether he might just be giving us a message, actually, rather than joining us.
No, yes, Andrew's...
Yeah, now, what about NRC? Yeah,
not rated for children.
NRC.
Not recommended.
That's from Andrew.
Yeah. See, that's a modern one to my view. I'm sure it existed. But back in the times that Greg's remembering so fondly, AO, I think there were only three
I'll tell you, the boards are lit up.
Is the chief censor listening?
Well, censorship's obviously a hot topic.
Still.
It was because we mentioned nudism.
Did that fellow, what's his name now, Jonathan, is it, that does Media Watch? He should be doing something historical on all these ratings and what they...
Yeah, give us the rundown on the rating systems over the eras and what turned into what and what we've got now.
So we know where we stand today.
Yeah. And how we got there.
Very good point.
Because homicide would occasionally be racy, a racy theme, and you had divorce court, which I think was around midday or 1 o'clock, and that certainly had...
Before the children...
Yeah, the children shouldn't be... That was NRC.
Michael, no, we're just having a delay, a photoconductive lag on the phones. Thank you, Andrew. Michael's in Rupertswood, Queensland.
How are you?
Hello,
good,
Michael.
Thank you, Michael.
I remember when I was a young lad going to a Catholic school, we used to have NRC, not recommended for children.
Yeah, yes. Well, there goes the second one. We've
when had was that, Michael?
In the 70s. But being going to a Catholic school... We used to say it's not recommended for Catholics.
and of course, Michael, if you saw NRC, that was just a...
open invitation.
It was. Open slather.
Make sure you watch this one. I wonder what's in it.
Yeah,
have a good night, Michael.
Thank you. See
You're welcome.
You,
cheerio. James is in Morley, which is around about Perth. Hi, James. Good to talk to you, I must say.
Ed, good afternoon, guys. It's been about 20 years since I last spoke to you fellas.
I remember where you were.
I remember that call. I'm saying, James, he hasn't rung for 20 years.
I think at the time he had Neville Onward in the studio.
That'd be right.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that I was born 61.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And I'm pretty sure number 96 was R-rated. But in little small old Perth town back in those days, it was the huge controversy, if you like, about the first gay scene. And it's still, not that I'm gay, but it still sticks in my mind. And I can see the scene where he comes home. You may remember it yourself. And he comes home. It's a naked actor lying on a bed.
I never saw the program.
We were studying rather hard at the time.
No recollection.
Now, James, how is it that when you ring us once in every 20 years, you're James, but when you email, you're Jim? How does that happen?
I'm sure about that. But you don't remember that naked scene, and the camera was so controversial, but the scene... We remember it,
but we're trying to diffuse it somehow.
I'm sure I didn't watch it because it would have said in the paper AO or R, and I just thought, I can't watch that.
But it was a groundbreaking moment in Australian television. It was when Australian television came of age. Thank you, Jim. Good to talk to you. Paul's in Plimpton, which is where, champs?
A suburb of Adelaide.
Hi, Paul.
Just a short tram ride to the bait. Evening, gentlemen. Trust we're all well.
Yes, we are.
I remember number 96 had that, like, AO rating or whatever it was, and whenever they did their shopping centre appearances, 80% of the crowd shouldn't have even been watching the show, and church groups were up in arms all over Australia.
Really?
Yes. There's all these, that's right, NRCs.
Except, of course, Paul, in South Australia, where a much more grown-up approach would have pervaded things.
I don't clearly remember watching it. I reckon I saw bits of it, but it was on every night of the week. I mean, that's unheard of. Now you get it once a week.
But see, kids of all ages were just so into the characters of Herb and Dorry Evans that, that's the reason for tuning in.
They all wanted to grow up and be like Herb and Dorry.
Herb, yeah, he was great.
He was, wasn't he? Ron Shand, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah. Exactly.
You can probably go to the online archival video resource called UseTube. You'd probably be able to to fish up a little bit.
Billy, you're talking now. I've got a hankering to hear that number 96 theme music. I'd look to Greg and ask him to play it for us, but of course Greg wasn't ever allowed to watch it, so he won't remember how it went.
Can you hum a few bars? Because sounds like Singing in the Rain.
Got in touch with the Pink Panthers.
It had a very sort of...
thanks, Paul.
Suggesting yeah, thanks.
Paul in Plimpton, good evening to you, mate.
Mm. Well, if you do go to that resource you were talking about, Billy, does it have a parental guidance recommendation list? Like, you know, in
I think they call it flagging this day. It might be flagged. You have to put in a code with something or other in it. I'll just see if I can find out who wrote the... Was it Mike Perjanik who wrote the theme for number 96?
That's a good call, yeah. Of course, it did several Australian TV themes of that era.
Mm.
But number 96 one, I want to hear it. How good looking at you, champs.
No,
you,
I don't recall.
Drawing a blank completely. No. You wouldn't have been allowed to watch it.
Well, I might have
That would have been one of the occasions where your father said, you never know what's going to happen
next. It had a slow start, but then didn't it segue into a bit of a faster tempo?
Yeah, and then it got a bit racy.
Was there parental advice given on whether you could even listen to the theme?
Well, the music just sort of... signal. I think it was a signal to parents to change the channel
or get them out of the room.
Premiered in 1972.
I was going to say 72.
March of 72.
Mm, we were studying very hard at that stage, Billy.
Mm. Oh, we were indeed. Mm.
Mm. And James from Morley, who was born in 1961, he would have only been 11. He would have been well and truly tucked up in bed by the time the program came on at 9:30.
He must have peeked through the keyhole to see that scene that is seared onto his memory.
Tommy Tico seems to have been responsible for it. He may have played it. I'm just trying to define whether he actually wrote it as well. Someone will be able to tell us. They'll have a box of number 96 tapes underneath the bed, 2-inch reel-to-reels.
Any advice, we can take it on 1-300-800-222, or indeed you can write to us. By going to the website?
Yes, indeed. abc.net.au/couldhavebeens or couldhavebeens.com.au. I'll tell you one bloke who wouldn't have had a cache of number 96 tapes under his bed. Perry Como. It's Magic Moments time. Time of the evening where we share our magic moments that have been highlights of our week.
He was rated F.
F4?
Family viewing. FV, should be more of it.
Or H for harmless.
Mm. E for enjoyable. In fact, E for entertainment. There's not enough of that anymore.
What do you got for us, champion?
Or A for anybody can watch this. Mm. Well,
I was talking to a couple of people today who were listening to the soiree last night.
Yes.
One of them, a listener, Sammy, who told me he loved the Dad's Army last night.
Oh, good. Yeah. Glad you liked it, Sammy. Mm.
Well, magic moments it is then. Here, first of all,
yes,
bumped into a little boy this week by the name of, and this is a preschooler.
Lachlan,
Jaden, Caden, Braden.
Rex.
Oh, fantastic.
A boy called Rex.
Mm. How about that?
Now, what were they thinking?
In this modern era.
Could have called him Jaden,
Caden. So out of all the kids 5 and under that you've encountered in the last 2 years, you've had a Craig, wasn't it? Had a Rex.
There was
it was Craig at the airport.
Didn't you have Douglas at the airport?
Yeah, it wasn't Craig and it wasn't Douglas. It
wasn't Ron.
But it was in that area. It was in that
Toby
area.
Had a George.
But if you're looking around for a name and you decide to go for Rex, would you have considered as an alternative King?
Not King Rex.
What? King for a Christian name?
Yeah.
Just King Smith.
Well, yeah, well, King Rex Williams. And King sort of mean the same thing.
Well,
did you check the spelling, though? It's not R-E-X-X.
No, it was R-E-I-C-K-S. but he'll be the only Rex in primary school.
Or W-R.
Well, isn't that a great thing for him?
Yeah,
I think it's nice. Good. And more, of it, please. So just now, newspaper cuttings.
Good. Fingers on the buzzers.
Yes. We'll start with... this little fellow. Tensions between the AFL and Gaelic football officials have once again flared after legendary Irish manager Mickey Hart blank calling on the Gaelic Athletic Association to cut all ties with the AFL.
Well, it's going to be better than issued a statement.
Oh, did he fire a salvo?
Fired a...
Oh.
Not
broadside.
Yeah, fired a broadside. There we go. You can
bring
share
back the
points.
Broadside.
Yes. Yes. Could have fired a salvo. But had a broadside. Yeah. Just one word, thank you. You can share the points there, those two, you two gentlemen. Liberal MP, Mr. So-and-so, moved a motion which passed unopposed requiring the Ombudsman to investigate the involvement of former Senator and Labor blank Graham Richardson. Yes?
Oh, well.
Yes?
Power broker.
Yes. Power broker.
Richo cannot have any other epithet other than power broker.
In fact, has he changed his name by default to include the word power broker?
Graham Power Broker Richardson.
Yeah.
Yes, his full name at birth was former senator.
Yeah, is power broker just... yes... Did he get head kicker at one stage? Did he get chief head kicker or just power broker? There is a little group of those ones, isn't there?
No, as for the Ombudsman, how do you think that's going to turn out?
Yeah.
What's going to come back in the other direction from the Ombudsman? I mean, the Ombudsman, they do a wonderful job.
Yeah, they do.
They're an important part of our civic structure, but... Like whenever anyone mentions the Ombudsman, I'm basically thinking that the questions that go to the Ombudsman usually start with, why don't they? And the answer usually starts with, because.
Oh, you don't think he's going to come back with
There's not a lot of traction.
Oh, you don't think he's going to come back with a damning report?
It's unlikely.
I like your pronunciation of Ombudsman.
What did I say?
Oh, it sounded that.
How did I say it?
Cute.
You said Ombudsman.
Ombudsman.
Say it again.
What did I say?
I sounded like Ombudsman.
Ombudsman.
Had a bit of
Ombudsman.
Sounds like something you get over the counter at a chemist.
Ombudsman. What should I be saying?
Got nasal congestion.
Should I be saying Ombudsman?
Ombudsman.
No, no. Ombudsman. You did a fine job. Don't change your thing.
I've got a younger one who can't say hospital. Gives it the...
Hostable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hostable ambulance.
Well, it's about time they legislated for the Ombudsman to have a shorter name.
Yeah, why don't they change the Ombudsman's name?
Because. Right. Back to you, champion.
Final one. Heard on ABC Radio Grandstand today.
You're going to dob them in, are you?
Yes, I'm going to dob them. No, this is more just fill in the blanks. Yeah, just a common phrase, as it were.
Oh, I see.
David Warner's innings for New South Wales.
Yeah.
Which was somewhat spectacular.
I'll have to withdraw because I heard Peter Newland describe it as an innings of a blank.
Yeah, yes. And it was clearly a very spectacular affair, 97 in 50...
Four balls. 15 fours and three sixes, I think.
Two sixes for 72 in boundaries out of 97. David Warner's innings... Sorry, Warner's innings. There's a bit of a slur there. Has blank the blank out of Tasmania.
Oh, I heard that one too.
So you disqualify
has
yourself.
Blank the blank.
Mm.
And this ought to be obvious to us.
Yeah, once you get it.
Knock the stuffing.
Yes.
Correct.
Knock the stuffing.
Oh, but then later, Peter Newlands, having told us that knock the stuffing, also told us it was an innings of a blank.
Innings of a lifetime?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it might be too, unless he does a lot more of them. Then it'll be one of.
Yeah.
And just finally, on the magics.
Yes.
And this is more the magic. I was taken by a friend who knows these things. We went into the city. Now, that's rare enough for me. We went into the city of a Friday evening. Mm-hmm. This itself was a little magic for me.
City.
Went into
somewhere
the bustling
in
metropolis, yes. Mm-hmm. And we were taken to the top end of the chic part of the town.
Oh, it was an outing.
Well, not as such.
Every city's got one of these areas.
Oh, you just found yourself in chic part of the metropolis.
Well, sort of chic. It was a place where there's plenty of bookshops and CD and DVD shops.
Nice.
Oh, and that's not necessarily chic.
No, it wasn't chic.
That's called the retail hub.
Oh, but this was more where the cool ones are.
The cool
bookshops.
Mm.
The expensive ones.
Well, yeah. So the CD shop, it was just all classical records?
Oh, no, just hip.
So it was slightly bohemian.
Well, yeah.
But they were full recommended retail price.
Not quite. Because, and he is an aficionado on the bookshops and the CD-DVD shops. So, in we go to this DVD shop that I'd not been into before, which had CDs as well. Mm. And there are a lot of used DVDs, I think. And they were piled high. And they were stacked into loosely into categories, but lots of thousands in there. And he knows, and very few movies that I fond about or that I'm into. Mm. But and they're one or two from childhood, teenage years.
Yeah.
And one of about the two that I'm
so half of them
keen on is anyway, we walked in there and he walked straight over to a shelf and he picks up a copy of Evil Roy Slade.
Oh, knowing wonderful. That that's what you wanted.
That is exactly what I want from life.
Can you sing the songs from Evil Roy Slade?
I'm Bing Bell. And I haven't got to the Bing Bell part yet. I'm still waiting.
So you've been home for a look?
I've got halfway through it.
Mm.
Evil Roy Slade.
How long is it? You've only halfway through it.
Oh, standard length.
Yeah, you know who's in it?
John Astin.
Yeah.
Gomez Adam.
Yeah.
He's the man.
His finest work.
It's just so funny. Mm. But the fact that it's an obscure movie, hard to get at the best of times.
When you're finished with it, can you bring it in and loan it of me? Because I've never seen it.
Oh, okay. Well, first,
I've only heard people talk about it.
No, you must see it, Ian.
He has to have it first. Yeah, it's up there with Spinal Tap as far as cult.
Hard to get, but when you go to the right place with your friend who knows, so hard.
But also that he picked it up as soon as we walked in the shop because,
he's just got the magic touch.
There were thousands there. Mm. So I picked up a Tommy Cooper while I was there.
Oh, good.
Yeah, an old one, DVD.
Mm.
And so it's been a marvellous experience.
Whilst you're talking DVDs,
mm.
we did play the Dad's Army episode last night on the Saturday Soiree presented by the Could Have Been Champions on ABC Local Radio.
Mm.
And we were just talking about it being a radio program after being a TV program, and discovered there were 67 episodes of the TV show made between 68 and 77.
Mm. Yep.
I pick up the newspaper today, and of course, the newspapers are full of, what to buy for Christmas.
Mm.
There's a complete boxed set of every Dad's Army episode.
Goodness gracious.
There you go.
$199.
Oh, is that all?
Yeah.
Oh, what about?
At the ABC shop, of course.
Yeah.
They're giving them away.
So that's about $3 an episode. And actually, it's got series 1, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and of series 2, the only three, surviving episodes or something. Mm. So some must have...
Some lost forever.
Yeah.
Got water damage.
I read the small print on the ad in the paper. Though, but we've just been talking about it last night.
There you go.
Goodness.
So I just thought I'd mention it to you because you know what a fan I am of it, chaps. If you were having a little thought about it.
What a shame. We've just bought you some socks. Cove, have you had a magic moment you'd like to share this week?
I'm just going to run this past you. It was magic because I went to an area in an hotel...
Mm.
Where you go and serve yourself the breakfast, so you can go and get
The buffet.
But yeah, so you get the fruit juice and then you get the cereal and the fruit and all that.
Cook your own toast.
Now that's what I'm leaning to. Got the tongs to take a selection of raisin toast, the whole meal or the white, and you put it on the wire grill that's going around through the thing. Oh,
it's the little sort of production line toast thing.
Mm. On the production
The conveyor belt
toast. Put it on and went in, and you do a lot of standing around waiting.
And one cycle is not enough.
Well, you know what? This is the magic. It came out absolutely toasted the way I wanted it.
What?
And how often does that happen?
You have to feed it back in.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah. All the time.
So conveyor belt toaster at the breakfast buffet was perfectly calibrated.
Yeah, and I'm thinking I've got to go and buy a lottery ticket on the strength of that because... How many times you got to go around again? Mm. You just want to go
and then it'll be too dark, though.
Because the worst thing is there are people queuing up and they're thinking, look at this joke holding us up. Well, not my fault, the machine.
And it disappears in there, so you can't hook it out when it looks right.
No. And if it is going a bit slowly and you think, this might actually, if it's in there too long, it might overcook. Do you turn the knob down in transit?
Well.
No, or turn it up to try and speed it up to get it out there? Or?
The place where there is a bun fight around that is in the Golden Saddle Club. They feature heavily there.
Do they?
Oh, do they ever.
Have they got the conveyor belt ones?
Yeah, that's when they queue up for those. And then you don't want to hold people up.
Mm. So it's not very often that you get it right in one go.
No, that is truly a magic.
So someone had set the thing in the right spot to suit my requirements. Because I was at another place not all that long ago when you could smell the burnt toast from a mile away.
Normally I'd give it the miss. All of that, I find it far too stressful. And there's people waiting behind you and you're feeling as though you're holding everybody up, and then you end up with a piece of toast that you don't want anyway. I skip it.
Mm. Well, especially when they say, they get the sign that says, please wait to be seated, and then they say, having the full cooked breakfast or just the continental? I just want the cereal and the toast. And that'll be charged back to your room. And that's 1950.
Yes.
And if you have the bacon and eggs, it's, you know...
The continental.
And you're thinking, hang on, I'm going to have 1950 added to my bill here, and I've got to cook my own toast.
Well, you know what, Kobe? You never know what's going to happen next. And you got a good toast this time.
Yeah, but perhaps this is a case for someone to invent the toaster that does it quickly but still gets the colour you want, and you don't hold them up.
When are these five-star breakfast joints going to put a nice little sunbeam there with the side, with two little doors, and so that you can do the toast as you want?
They need individual toasters on each table.
That story of yours has symmetry, because before our last news break, when we were talking about Magnetic Island, the first time I came across one of those conveyor belt toasters was at Magnetic Island.
Oh, really?
Very first time, yeah.
And how did it work?
Superb.
You're right.
Once through and you were ready to eat it?
Pretty much.
Someone
I'd
hadn't
say.
Fiddled with the dials.
No.
Well, I'll tell you what.
But they do stack up behind you.
Yeah, they do. And you know something? There's always, when you put yours on there at the start of the conveyor belt, you don't know how many are ahead of it.
Because you can have multiple.
There could be two or three or four.
Through.
And then people come and grab them. Are you sure that's yours? You're not taking one of mine. And they slide out. And this is an indication of just how good or bad they are. Is I've never been to anyone's house and someone's bothered to get one in their own home.
Oh, no bench space.
Perhaps they're not available to the public.
Oh, no domestic use.
Actually, you should do what we used to do at parties when we didn't want anyone to swipe our beer.
Yeah.
You'd bring along your own cans of Southwark and put them in the bath. No one else would swipe them. You get your own bread from home. You get some, that really dark rye, some continental bread that no one would touch in a
otherwise,
buffet bar.
You still got to get the dial right, though.
You know, either that or you get a green texture and paint it in the corner. So when it comes out and people nick it, you go, wait.
Oh, that's mine.
Get the labeler.
Yeah. So anyway, that was magic to actually have it come out just as I wanted it.
Yeah, now my magic this week, it wasn't something that actually happened to me other than that I was just sitting there reading a book. But given the events of the last 12 weeks or so, you sort of get interested in the economic history of the world and how things have unfolded and how they came to be the way they are. And it just led me to look at the life and work of John Maynard Keynes, a name that's familiar to all of you, I'm sure.
The Economist.
Yeah.
Or Dobie Gillis's sidekick.
I'm sure that's where they got Maynard G. Krebs' name from.
So we can go from saying how Dickensian to how Keynesian.
Exactly. Yeah. So I thought, the name's being tossed around. Time to find something out. And I found out a lot, but the magic was this little anecdote that I read in his biography. At one stage during JMK's life, he was a fellow of one of the Cambridge colleges, teaching his economics and doing what you do when you're a...
Oh, he would have been teaching about the law of supply and demand.
Yeah, that sort of thing, Cambridge Don. But seeing as he was good with numbers, they also put him in charge of the college's funds. And, he was, I don't think he was the bursar, but he was looking after the investments and everything. And some of these accounts had been in a non-interest-bearing thing since 1425 and stuff like that. So he decided, I could do a bit better than this. So this is way back, he started investing in those things we've been hearing so much about recently, futures and derivatives and taking leveraged risks.
No junk bonds for JMK. No.
Oh, yes, plenty. Oh. He knew what he was doing and rapidly made his college very, very wealthy as a result, because he was quite good at it. But at one stage, he got his calculations wrong and he'd made this huge investment in the barley futures. And the price, it was getting close to the time where he actually had to take delivery of the barley. Price hadn't gone up. It was looking bad. The barges are actually in the Thames, full of barley. Emergency meeting of the college is called, and all the dons are all very worried about this. JMK goes, no, don't worry about it. It'll be all right. Even if the price doesn't go up, we'll take delivery of it. We'll store it in the dining hall. They all believed him that it was possible. Like it was something like they would have needed 20 dining halls to store it all. He immediately hops on the train, goes down from Cambridge to King's Cross, goes down to Shadwell Dock or whatever it is, and the barges come in, and JMK gets out some ancient rule book about in bills of lading and inspecting the cargo and stuff. Just a minute, go down, have a look here. Opens the first bag of barley, and sure enough, he's able to find one or two grains that aren't quite right. So under this rule, the whole cargo has to be inspected, so this is going to take about a week, during which time Price comes back up, unloads the barley, hops on the train and goes back up. Isn't that? No one would do that these days. But
Working beautifully.
You wouldn't.
Well, if someone actually had bothered to read their history, they may have solved the current financial crisis by going and checking out a few of these futures.
That is a question that is being asked a lot nowadays, that if he was around today, what would JMK be recommending?
Well, he'd be going and looking at the product for a start, clearly. Look at what you're buying.
And he'd be seeking a second opinion.
Yeah.
And he would be not investing.
Spinning
it around the blue chips.
That wasn't one of his character traits, seeking the second opinion. He was very confident that he knew best.
He could see into the futures. Yeah. Quite obviously.
That was my magic. I just was very taken with that little story.
A salutary lesson for all those involved in that particular
speculative investment,
as we speak.
And just talking of little,
because you can learn from the from the past.
Yeah.
Just talking of little stories. This little story was told to me during the week. A gentleman was at a school fete, and a chopper flew overhead, and someone said, "That's the premier," and he was rabidly anti-government. And he went to the landing of the chopper and he called out, off, we don't want you here. And out of the chopper stepped Santa Claus.
Oops.
Good timing.
He said he got a lot of dirty looks from school mums and he slunk off embarrassed, as you would expect.
And he deserves huge props for telling the story against himself.
Yeah, well done.
And getting back to where you started tonight too, Greggy, with a couple of things you'd heard on the grandstand today, just in general sports reporting during the course of the week, I think I heard someone saying that a particular sports person or their team was variating.
Yes.
Is it possible to...
Someone else told me this.
What are they looking for?
This was picked up.
Yeah.
To variate. Yes.
Are they looking to...
It's obviously a good tactic because it's got you puzzled.
Yeah.
It was in regard to the...
To a sporting event, And I was just thinking now, does that mean that... I don't know, I can't recall now. Was Brett Lee mixing up his deliveries and he was showing good variating rather than variation?
It sounds like it might be rotating, but what's wrong with vary? I mean, obviously, intended.
Very,
Well, there's a lot that's wrong with it, Greg.
Yes, tell me.
It doesn't sound fancy enough.
Yes, so you need a bit of varietatecality. Exactly. Brett Lee this morning has shown tremendous varietatecality. He's got the one going away as well as the one coming back.
Well, if you were the captain... you were thinking about how to approach today's play, would you be looking to be variating?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Young Brett Lee has got a lot of variatability.
Yeah, yeah.
Just with some rapid research there, I've found variating does exist in the world, but in the world of mechanics or auto mechanics. Mm. Automatic speed variating a bicycle and axle variating hub axle adjusting grooves and so forth. So variating exists.
The report
Billy.
Wasn't from a cycling event.
Still, Greg had just about talked himself into it anyway, and that report from the world of mechanics seals the deal, Billy.
Mm-hmm. Well, it stays then. And I did mention just before that track that the Adelaide International Guitar Festival is in full flight, and tonight is where they're doing the tribute to AC/DC, and everyone's obviously on stage banging away on their instruments and all. Mm-hmm. So we've gone straight to the top and got the executive producer of the Guitar Festival, Christine Schleuter, to join us here on the Could Have Been Champions. Hi, Christine.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good. And is it rocking and rolling there at Elder Park tonight?
there is some serious rocking and rolling going on. I think we've managed to pull the who's who of Australian music industry into the park tonight, and they're just taking turns on the stage playing their favourite AC/DC track, which is pretty awesome.
Who's on stage at the moment, Christine?
Right at the very moment, we've actually got Dave Evans playing with the Party Boys. Now, Dave Evans, for those people that aren't aware of it, it was the very first vocalist for AC/DC before Bon Scott came along and took over his job.
Mm. And what particular song are they doing at the minute?
He's doing a song called Can I Sit Next to You Girl, which has just finished, and they're about to break into Jailbreak, which is going to be pretty spectacular, I think. There's lots of high-energy rock and roll going on out there.
Can you possibly hold your phone up near a Marshall's stack so we can hear a bit of this performance?
I'll actually go to the door. They're just announcing the next song. I'll open the door and see if you can get anything of it. They're just winding into it. How's that? Are you getting
good.
Any of that?
Great, Christine. Just hold it still.
Sorry?
Yeah, hold it still there.
Bit more.
Okay, going back to the door.
That's fabulous. How many people in the room, Chris?
Well, there's only three in the room that I'm sitting in with the door closed, but out in the park we've probably got about 4,000 people.
Wow.
And I think backstage we've probably got, it'd be maybe 100 artists all up, sort of coming in and out at various stages for the concert. Mm.
Can we just perhaps get to the chorus and just hear Dave taking us into a bit of Jailbreak?
No worries, it's coming up now.
Here we go.
There we go.
Oh, fantastic. Thanks. Christine, did you have an appreciation for AC/DC's music before the festival?
I did, actually, but I've learned an enormous amount of things about AC/DC that I just never knew before, so I think even now I've got a much greater appreciation. Once you start hearing some of these old rockers talking about their experiences and personal connections with the band going over many, many years, they just take on even a, I don't know, they're really significant in Australia's music history.
Mm-hmm. And what about last Saturday night? They're having the attempt on the Guinness Book of Records to have everyone playing Long Way to the Top. How did that go?
We fell just short, actually. We needed 1,802 people in the park and we only had about 1,500. So just a little bit off, so we might have to keep practising that, I reckon.
How did you
crack the record sooner or later.
How did you count them, Christine?
Clickers at the door, and because it's when you do an official Guinness Book of Record attempt, you've got to follow a whole lot of rules, including registration. So anyone that was playing a guitar literally had to fill in a registration form that verifies they were in the park. Mm. So we need officials standing by helping to do count. We need to document it. So there's quite a lot of things you need to do for a world record attempt.
You could have got it if you had about 100 people playing twin neck guitars.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that. He's probably given us a brilliant idea for next year.
How did it actually sound?
Out in the park now? Or
no,
the song on Guinness Book of Records?
Yeah.
It was pretty awesome. What ended up happening is that we had a number of bagpipe players that rolled into the park as well. So when we got to the solo bit, the bagpipe players just took it away. But when you have that many guitars in the park and they're all playing the same tune in the same key, the sound is quite enormous. You wouldn't think so, because they usually, you know, they're all acoustic because people couldn't bring along their own amps.
Yeah.
We couldn't have pile lead for them, but it was pretty amazing stuff.
Did you record it?
Yeah, we did, actually. Part of the world record rules is that we needed to record it and document it. So we had a film crew on site and sort of took footage, which we'll put together after the festival. We'll probably post it on YouTube or something.
Oh, I know you'll send us a copy of the audio we can play it here on the Kudabins.
Oh, I'd love to. That'd be a lot of fun.
That'd be fantastic.
Christine, 1,500 acoustics in a park.
Yep.
I hope none of them were nicked or stolen. That would have been a lot of guitars in one park.
Yeah, I think because I tended to be walking in on people's backs or under their arms, people were kind of looking after their instruments. But it was, you know, having that many number of artists on stage with instruments backstage, that's something we do need to be a little bit mindful of, because some of these toys are worth a lot of money for some of these artists.
Is there another song cranking up there on stage?
No, they're doing that spectacular bit in the film clip where he kind of falls off and it all goes wrong at the end of the song.
He made it out with a bullet in his back.
There you go. You actually nearly got it on beat to the music as it was happening.
Here they go again.
Who have been the other big draws at the guitar festival, Christine?
Across the Festival.
Yeah.
We've actually, because we look at a diverse range of music, we've had some spectacular artists in but doing different things. In the classical sense, we had a group over from America called the Romeros Guitar Quartet, and they are known as the best classical guitar quartet in the world. So for classical fans, that was a real highlight because they haven't been out here for over 10 years.
Yeah.
We've had a young American player out called Derek Trucks, who's a protege of Eric Clapton and also plays with the Allman Brothers.
His dad is Butch Trucks.
His uncle, actually.
Uncle, is it?
Yeah. And he came out with his full band for the first time, and tell you what, they knocked our socks off.
Right.
He's one of the most amazing live players I've ever seen on stage, and most people who had seen him in concert during the festival were saying exactly the same thing. It was just something that you don't ordinarily see, even in a guitar festival. And we discovered lots of young surprises this year. We had an emerging night where we were sort of showcasing some up-and-coming talent, and there were some great surprises in there. And, yeah, so it's just a really good festival all around for people being able to discover new artists and new groups and new bands.
It sounds like just the event to be executive producer of, Christine.
Oh, it's a great fun job. I think I've got one of the best jobs in Australia.
I think you have too.
Now, I think they finished playing that song. What's Dave giving us next?
That's actually the end of Dave Evans' section. What's coming up next is Jeff Lang playing Rock and Roll Late Noise Solution. Jeff Lang's probably known as one of the best blues and live players in Australia. He's incredible live, just sensational to watch.
Well, thanks for sharing it with us and our audience tonight, Christine.
Pleasure.
And we look forward to getting the audio of the record-breaking attempt that we can share on our national program as well.
No worries.
And I'm tipping there'll be all cast members on the stage at the finish tonight to perform Long Way to the Top just one more time.
Because you can never play too many times.
Exactly right. Thanks, Christine.
Thank you.
Christine Schleuder, executive producer of the Guitar Festival over there in Adelaide. And the sting for reading mail.
Is there somewhere and will eventually be played.
There it is.
Setting the record straight, Barry writes
Hello,
from South
Barry.
Australia, and of course,
spelled.
Well, every other Barry who lives elsewhere in Australia is B A R R Y, but Barry's from South Australia.
B A R R I E.
Correct.
Thank you.
Now, apropos of our discussion last week, come on, blokes. Come over after the cricket and broadcast from the Himeji Gardens on South Terrace. I'll come and I can bring a friend. So there you go. Now, he explains to us. We were talking about those gardens on South Terrace.
Japanese garden, yeah.
Barry says, the original Himeji Gardens were so separate from Japanese traditional reality that the first businessman from Japan, the local council, took there nearly died in dismay. But he was polite and generous and bought the proper rocks and the proper plants and rebuilt the whole thing. So now it goes exactly as it should. Thank you, Barry.
Thank you, Barry.
For setting the record straight. And thanks to that businessman who made sure that Adelaide wasn't embarrassed by having the wrong sort of Himeji gardens.
Good advice.
I know you like your Japanese gardens, champs,
well,
don't
you? I like the one on South Terrace. I spent a little bit of time there. So last week, I think, Billy, did you play a Captain Matchbox song last week?
I did. I played Mick Conway and the National Junk Band doing Cliche Blues.
I'm sorry, I got the band wrong, but the idea right.
And after playing it, Billy speculated. Or was it you, James?
I speculated.
Some discussion about longevity of bands in Australia.
And Casbah has addressed the matter.
Well, she'd know because she's in the National Junk Band.
And she obviously knows her Australian rock music history. Because here we go. Mick Conway's National Junk Band has notched up a mere 10-ish years, but if you consider Mick's various bands in some sort of chronological line, discounting various name changes and a pool of enough passing personnel to fill a phone book, then you've got about 35-odd years. And here's the list. Jelly Bean Jug Band, Captain Matchbox Whoopee Band, much later renamed Matchbox, Conway Brothers Hiccups Orchestra, and currently Mick Conway's National Junk Band. This list is not complete. It's just off the top of my head. I think the Bushwhackers, whom I postulated had a similar run.
Might be the clubhouse leader.
I think the Bushwhackers have had their share of revolving door personnel in their 25-30-odd years. Perhaps that's perhaps notching up bigger scores. So the jury's out on who's...
I reckon the Bushwhackers have existed as some Bushwhacker something or other for 35-plus.
All right.
Yeah.
So they're a little bit of Australian music history from our regular listener, Casbo.
I need Casbo.
And she rocks the Casbo, doesn't she?
You got anything, Cove?
No, I've got no old fashioned tonight. I used my old fashioned last night.
Okay. Here you go. Here's one in the new fashioned way. You can have a read of that. Jeff, if you have something to read.
Yes, Richard of Fremantle.
There you go.
Yes, what's Richard say?
It says, 15 years ago I was going through my LP collection, which I was keeping at my now departed mother's place because I was living in a shared accommodation and was having to move every 6 months or so. Since my mother was running a swap meet stall, I separated the records that I wanted to keep from those she could sell. Then I told her which pile was which. Can you anticipate what happened?
No.
Next time I visited, I found to my horror that she had got the piles mixed up and had priced up, put all my precious LPs out at 50 cents each. Not many had been sold, but to my eternal disappointment, the one that got away was my copy of the Andy Durant Memorial Concert, which we spent a lot of time on last night on the Could Have Been Champions.
Yes, on the Saturday Soiree.
Can get it on DVD, but not yet on CD. But isn't that rather telling that all the most precious ones put out at only 50 cents, they didn't move?
Well, otherwise Mum would have been in more trouble.
But it just goes to show taste is a very fickle thing.
It is, and Richard of Fremantle, thank you.
Yeah, one man's 50 cent out in the cheap pile is another man's most precious treasure.
Can I just jump in here regarding Bowling Green by Jesse Winchester? Something wasn't quite right in the back of my head. I had a feeling it was a cover when Jesse did it, and it was, because it was written by Terry Slater and Jacqueline Ertel.
Ah.
So it wasn't a Jesse original. Okay. And I think that Jacqueline Ertel may have married one of the Everly brothers.
Ah. Mm. So the plot thins.
Mm.
Well, thanks
for
cleaning that up.
But Jesse's version is definitive.
Oh, it isn't. And because I think he was a Tennessean, it feels like his own song, and he lived in exile in Canada. And all that. Mail. We're going through mail on the Could Have Been Champions, and William says, William writes from the USA.
Oh, g'day, William.
Whereabouts?
No, he was in the USA at the time.
Has returned from.
Yeah. ID requirements in the USA. And in New Zealand, he said. I was lucky enough to spend some time in California earlier in the year, and we ran into the need for ID when attempting to buy a beer at a baseball game. My friend and myself were served without question. My 26 and 37-year-old female colleagues were asked for ID.
Did they have it with them?
They were a bit taken aback, produced their licenses and our American hosts to vouch for them. They were rejected. They then went back to their bags and returned with their passports.
We have passports.
The barman advised that these would not do either because they did not accept ID printed outside the United States. Dear ID, writes
this
William.
This is just to get a plastic cup of lukewarm and extremely weak beer at a baseball game.
Yeah, not like I was trying to buy arms. We did eventually relent and buy their drinks for them.
Wow, very large.
Well, isn't that circumventing the regulations somewhat?
Well, the girls were 26 and 37.
Yeah, but clearly the people selling the cup of lukewarm and very weak beer knew that he was buying it for someone else whose identity hadn't been vouched for.
Well, I would have broken the rules too, wouldn't you?
Yeah, but I'm wondering about the bloke behind the bar.
Too bad.
Were they
for him
turning a blind eye?
Well, as they flew away from America, they went, nah, nah, yeah, yeah. William Young of North Hobart.
Hello, William.
Sent that.
Yeah, thanks for that. Now, we've got had a lot of messages in this vein, and they're still coming in. And this goes back to the mayonnaise recipe given out over a week ago. So we just need to repeat this.
That was on our Saturday night program.
Scotty's mayonnaise recipe, which has not gone up on the website yet. There's a little story as to where that recipe went, Billy.
Yes, we'll share it with us, Jeff.
Well, it was so enamoured by our studio that she took it home. So Andy is going to get it back from her, and it will appear on the website. How soon, Andy?
That was Ella Hooper, who was in here with her brother Jesse, who are in the verses and previously were in the Killing Heights.
And he's making faces. It's a couple of weeks.
He's written Manana.
Andy, you can ring Ella up and just ask her to dictate it to you over the phone, and then you can put it on the website.
Or get Scotty back on the line.
Yeah, Scotty should.
Scotty, a big part of Coulda Been's culture over the past few years, and justifiably so. Spoke to Scotty last night. We'll be doing so again next Saturday. I'm wondering now, Megan, might be a good time to let people know, given that Ian has no old-fashioned mail to
I had my one last night from Nolene.
Well, perhaps, Megan, you can let us know how to do it.
Want to contact the Coulda Beans in the old-fashioned way? Write to Coulda Beans, GPO Box 9994, Melbourne 3001.
Excellent. Thank you. That's how you do it. It's as simple as that.
Now, we mentioned last week, I think we touched on the chicken schnitzel update from Pete Richardson.
Yep.
I don't think we gave any locations, did we?
No, just the first one, I think. Yeah. He had the Irish one, I think.
Yes. He also mentioned the Wollongatta pub, the Swan Reach pub, and the Porpunka pub and the Jamison pub as places where chicken schnitzels are yummy. He goes around Australia.
He hasn't found a bad one yet.
Well, now, you're a man who's travelled a bit, champion. Wollongatta?
Yeah. Maybe near Albury. Just wondering.
I'm not getting confused with Tallangatta, eh?
Well, there are all a lot of gatters up there because there's Rangiratta. But Wollongatta. Swan Reach pub I can do. That's up on Murray near between Murray Bridge and Blanchetown.
That's one of the Swan Reach.
Yes,
Swan
Reach be up
there. There's one out of
there. There's a Wollongatta up near Tenterfield.
Oh. Yeah. Okay. Is it W-A-L-L?
W-A-L-L-A-N-G-A-T-T-O.
Oh, well, that's a fair way from Albury, so that might be the one.
Well, Michael Mitchell, who we spoke to last night on the Saturday Soiree, who's walking from the north of Australia to the south of Australia, and was in Tenterfield last night when we spoke to him, might be able to do a slight detour and just check that Wollongatta pub and see whether it has, in fact, got the chicken schnitzel.
It
might sustain him on the Great Australian Cancer Bushwalk.
Has he found one that's no good?
Well, if he has, he hasn't reported.
He doesn't report. If he hasn't got anything nice to say about the Palmer, he doesn't say it at all.
That's right.
He's doing chicken schnitzels and Palmers as well?
I don't know about that. Now, Jamison Pub, I think we can identify Jamison as Central Victoria.
Yeah.
And Porpunka.
Victoria, not far from.
In the High Country.
Mm. Right.
He may not have got out of the High Country. He might be just rotating through the schnitzels and the Palmers.
So, Pete Richardson, who travels the country searching for the best chicken schnitzels to report on the Coulda Been Champions.
Yes,
there's a book in it, isn't there? There's a coffee table volume.
With photographs of every single schnitzel.
Well, and it must be a picture of health because they are very lean, health-giving meal.
Until you load the sauce up. In fact, we must ask Scotty Watkinson if he can find a 62 Women's Week that has the recipe for the sauce. And it might be a can of tomato. mix them all up.
The 62 Women's Week wouldn't have had it because the only kind of schnitzel that would have been available back then would have been the Vienna schnitzel.
Yes. Do you remember when it came in? I remember when Mum started cooking them.
Oh, surely. Yeah. But what about the Parmigiana?
Oh, that was a bit later.
Came much later.
Yeah.
Oh, well, hang on. 62, does that predate the snowy mountain ski?